Call your senators. This is not a drill.
Lines will be busy. The voicemails will be full, but keep on calling.
Go public.
You've heard the ads, received the calls, and seen the messages. It's part of this beautiful thing we call public engagement. But what is a government to do with too much of a good thing? Well, we go public.
From government, technology, and governing, this is Go Public, stories of government getting it done.
Hi, I'm Paul Taylor.
I'm Noelle Nell, editor of Government Technology.
And I'm Zach Quaintance. I'm a staff writer for Government Technology covering civic tech.
This time, engagement. It's supposed to let people be heard by their government, give them a voice, some of which are loud, others angry, still others never heard before. It can help speed government along or slow it down. Those in government and advocates outside have set a high bar for it, expecting it to help close the digital equity gap while changing the citizen experience with government from the typical DMV line to the convenience of Amazon. Noelle, set this up.
So what do we mean by engagement overload? There's a couple different ways to look at it. First of all, we seem to be living through a particularly divisive era in American politics. People are voicing their opinions on issues of the day in unprecedented numbers. On the receiving end of many of those opinions are elected officials. And it goes far beyond call your congressperson. The number of channels available to constituents today is incredibly high. There are calls, emails, apps, contact forms, and the wide, wide world of social media. But the question is government equipped to effectively deal with all this input? And what does effectively dealing with it actually mean?
I recently talked to Seamus Kraft. He's the executive director of the Open Gov Foundation about this very topic. And what he told me was that in the wake of the 2016 presidential election, they sort of identified, as so many of us did, a wave of concerned constituents who were reaching out in almost unprecedented numbers to their elected officials, specifically to Congress and the Senate. In response to this, they initiated a user-centric research sprint, which means they spent the next 4 months closely engaged with staffers at 20 different congressional offices, getting a real feel for what it was they had to deal with as a result of this engagement. And what the tools were that they had for logging things like the number of calls and also for responding to them. The product that grew out of that was something called From Voicemail to Votes.
First product coming out of From Voicemail to Votes is called Article One. Article One is a communications tool that sits in the cloud and right now helps congressional offices handle the massive influx of phone and SMS-based engagement from constituents. What that is a whole new channel into the constituent engagement and communications process. Voice and SMS are part of our daily lives outside of government. They're part of our work lives, our romantic lives, our school lives. That is not part of our civic lives yet in the way that it needs to be. So the research is the start, but being able to quickly build, prototype, iterate, and deliver mature solutions that meet the research needs is the task before all of us. So the Open Gov Foundation, while good, we're far from sufficient, which again is why we share all of our research and those identified needs with vendors, allies, partners, with the institution itself, so we get to that better outcome faster.
Seamus raises an interesting point there. So better outcomes, what does that actually mean? I mean, we talk to state and local government all the time. Obviously, to an elected representative, that might have a different meaning.
While the means might be different if you're a U.S. congressman versus if you're a city manager or city council person or public servant in your municipal government, I think the end goal remains the same. That end goal is essentially establishing trust between government and the constituents and making sure when they reach out to government or when they want to reach out to government, they can do so in a way that leaves them sort of coming away satisfied with that interaction.
Yeah, and you and I talked about this. It's interesting just because an elected official receives, 500 emails on a particular issue, it doesn't mean it's going to necessarily change their mind, but it could have other positive impacts.
I think a key piece to this is that changing someone's stance or the way they vote to identically match yours is not necessarily the end goal of successful engagement. What it is ensuring that constituents are satisfied with the government and feel like there's a mechanism where they're being represented by someone they can talk to.
Yeah, absolutely. Being heard is so important, whether or not there's actual agreement. And Seamus makes a great point on this that sort of spans both the elected representatives' viewpoint as well as state and local government, public servants in general.
I don't think that satisfying engagement experience is limited only to representing your views to government. If you have a great experience renewing your license at the DMV, if you have a water bill that was in arrears and you could all of a sudden pay it on your phone between meetings at work and not have to go down to City Hall and take a half day off to do it, technology is improving all of those engagement experiences and making constituents more satisfied and willing to engage with their government at all levels.
I don't know about a satisfying experience at the DMV, but I guess something to strive for.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever had one of those, but maybe if I did, I'd feel a whole lot better about my local government.
Yeah, I guess in essence, it's engagement is about building trust with the community you serve. And that obviously is a goal that spans the office of an elected official and the office of local city hall as well. You've been covering civic tech for government technology for how long now?
Almost 18 months, coming up on a year and a half.
Transitioning away from the elected official perspective a little bit, what are you seeing in terms of people working effectively at the local level to channel constituent engagement? Do they have this same issue of engagement overload that elected representatives do since the last presidential election?
I would estimate that 99% of local governments do not have anywhere close to the wave of engagement that U.S. Congress and Senate have. And I actually think for the vast majority of them, that would be a good problem to have. They are all largely interested in fostering more engagement with constituents. And something I find myself talking to CIOs, CDOs, and other public servants about quite a bit is ways to use technology to stimulate more engagement with constituents and to open channels of communication and to just sort of get a read on how the community feels about local government.
Yeah, we've definitely seen and heard a lot that example of the town hall meeting where you have the same five people that have attended every town hall meeting in the last 20 years and localities and states looking to move beyond that. And what have you seen out there in terms of examples of cities that are being creative in engaging constituents in new ways more reflective of the modern era?
There's a pretty wide array, and like so much in municipal government, it tends to vary quite a bit. One good example, I think, especially as it pertains to tech, is Gilbert, Arizona. They have a young population relative to most other cities of people sort of age 25 to 45 who are very active social media users. And their CIO there, Dana Berkman, has had quite a bit of success in using Twitter and YouTube even to sort of reach those people and get them engaged with the government.
We have a rule that we respond within an hour to every request or question that comes through. And sometimes even if you don't have an answer and you just tell them you're going to go get it for them, that goes a long way. You know, it used to be that you would call and leave a message or send an email and you would wait for weeks and weeks to have contact with your government. This now creates an immediate touch point with our citizens and our residents.
She did this viral contest, taking a video of everyone in town dancing to a Justin Timberlake song that Justin Timberlake actually retweeted.
Justin Timberlake made a call for people to take his hit song, Can't Stop the Feeling, and make a video. And because we have an in-house video team, we're able to turn a community video, dancing video, to this song within about 48 hours. And within 24 hours after that, Justin Timberlake himself retweeted it and shared it on Facebook. And so we had over 500,000 views of this video. And obviously, this is something that really sells our community, shows it as a great place to live, a great place to do business. And so the word about Gilbert was spreading far and wide. And if you go on any of our channels, you can see the comments that were made about, wow, I've never heard of Gilbert, but it looks like a place I might want to live. Or I've never been to Gilbert, but I think I might move my business there, or I might retire there.
I got this feeling inside my bones.
People take such pride in the place they live and they want to be a part of that. If you give them opportunities like videos that are showcasing their town or their city or touch points on social where they can share and interact with where they live and that source of community pride, that's really powerful.
that example is sort of an outlier. In most larger jurisdictions, they've had to take measures to reach underserved populations that traditionally haven't had access to broadband or digital services platforms. And I've also seen quite a bit of variety in ways they've done that. In Austin, Texas, for example, they've used their housing authority to identify people that live in public housing that make sort of good ambassadors that they can give digital skills training to and sort of deputize them to take what they've learned about how to use municipal broadband and other digital services back to their communities. And they've sort of centered that around information about ride sharing and bus route apps and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's definitely not a one size fits all proposition, as the examples you've talked about certainly prove. You have to figure out what's right for your individual community. And are there some additional challenges relative to those underserved populations? I mean, do they have different feelings about government than you know, those who are more tech savvy? And does that affect engagement strategy?
Trust in government is definitely sort of a pervasive problem for a lot of municipal governments. One thing I've seen fairly often is cities sort of capitalizing on outreach efforts that are done by community groups, nonprofits, and the public library to sort of reach underserved populations. So something like the Boys and Girls Club that has a presence in this community can have, you know, Thursday night digital services awareness event, because they sort of have that trust built between them and the community group and are happy to loan it to government.
And so then from the public's point of view, their credibility is boosted by their association with an organization that they already have a level of comfort with.
And a lot of these organizations have been in these communities for years and years and do a lot of other services that people depend on.
Any other interesting examples in the way of you know, digital equity, digital inclusion, or just successful engagement?
Sure. I've seen a few cities sort of take new digital services projects on tour. Let's say they have an open data portal that they want to get the word out about and let people know how to use it. They'll take it around to different community groups and invite people to for a lesson and also to give feedback so that they can use it to inform development work moving forward in the next phase. Louisville also has a great example of an interesting sort of non-conventional way to reach people in underserved communities. They have, it's called the PNC Gigabit Center, and it's essentially a government internet cafe that sort of looks like a hip coffee shop. It's a place where people can come and use the internet if they don't have it at home and apply for jobs and even take classes that will sort of close that digital equity gap.
Yeah, these cities you're naming are definitely ones that we cover quite a bit because of the success of some of these initiatives, and other cities are paying attention, and that's definitely a positive. So I guess the question is, what's the end game for government when it comes to constituent engagement? Here's what Seamus had to say about it.
I want to live in a world where Amazon's Prime customer service is worse than Congress's. Congress should have the best customer service operation in the world. Right now, it doesn't. And the first step is understanding, well, how do we measure what the best means in a congressional engagement context, and then go from there.
Everyone invokes the name Amazon. That's certainly a lofty goal for Congress, but you certainly hear that throughout state and local government. That's kind of the ideal for customer experience. That's what everybody's shooting for. And certainly there's some work to be done before we get there on constituent engagement.
Yeah, I don't think there's a city in the country that hasn't used that Amazon example as something they're striving for. It's a really easy, kind of tangible way to set a benchmark for this sort of customer service and digital experience that government wants to provide to constituents.
Key on customer engagement seems to be measure it. That's the way you can start to manage it and improve it.
The metric example is a really good one because it sort of speaks to an opportunity with a lot of this new technology for government to, for the first time ever, sort of take a data-driven approach to their engagement efforts with citizens. And it can sort of open the door to things like monitoring the percentage of interactions with citizens that result in someone coming away satisfied versus unsatisfied. And I don't know if they've had a mechanism in the past to do that. While it can be intimidating in some ways, I think a lot of governments are looking at this as an opportunity to foster more satisfaction with the people they serve.
Well, great. Zach, thank you very much for joining me today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
With Zach Quaintance, I'm Noelle Nell, and this is Go Public.
And that is it for us this time. Coming up, the GovTech crew is off to spend time with state CIOs at their national conference. And the governing team is bringing together public innovators from across the country to explore the state of high-performance government. We'll tell you about them both in May when we go public. Thanks for listening.
We're just getting started. Let's keep the conversation going. Tweet us at GoPublicPod and subscribe to Go Public on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. And you know there's always more at govtech.com and governing.com.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.